Anyhow, our speaker tonight, first I had to twist her arm a little bit, but you all treated her so nice last time she talked that she was brave enough to come back and try it again. So let's treat her really nice tonight so she'll come back and try it again another time. This is our Katie. Hi, guys. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day.
This would be a lot scarier if I weren't addressing a group of people that I already loved a lot. It's pretty hard to be scared of you. I'll try, but we'll see if I can put it away. I'm going to talk tonight on what we are to each other, which is a spiritual community. And in the words of the immortal Tina Turner, the subtitle of this talk is, "So what's love got to do with it anyway?" What does love have to do with our coming here tonight to be with each other? Well, it has a lot to do with it. We are a spiritual community, we're a church, but I don't know about you, I don't spend a lot of time thinking about what that means. I don't have a lot of time where I'm driving down the road wondering at definitions of spiritual or community, so I spent some time before I talked thinking about exactly those things, and I went to the dictionary. Not a good idea. Spiritual. Of or relating to spiritual matters. Thank you very much. Very helpful. But right under that was the definition of spiritualism, and I didn't mean our kind, but it was helpful anyway. The view that spirit is a prime element of reality. Well, that sure sounds like the practice that most of us live here. We may not be able to define it. We don't see it necessarily, but we treat it like it's a prime element of reality. And how about community? A group of people with a common characteristic living together within a larger society. That one does sound a lot like us. We have a lot in common and we live within a larger society that doesn't really know what we do. If you try to talk about this with most people, they look at you like you've got a couple of screws loose. So it's nice to be in a group of people who don't look at each other that way and instead find that there's something of great benefit and great heartfelt value that we do together. How did most of us come to be here? Well, most of us were invited by somebody else who already had some idea of what this community is like. Most of us came, in fact, at first because we had a loss. And somebody else knew that coming and talking to Spirit or hearing a message from Spirit or simply being in the congregation of loving, supportive people would be very helpful for us. I think that's why most of us came, and I actually think that the loving community that we find here is why most of us come back. Why do we stay? I don't know. Think of how often you spend what little spare time you have here with these other people. A lot of us don't have a lot of extra time, and yet we spend the time that we have with each other. That says that there's something of tremendous quality and worth that we do here with each other. I think that one of the reasons that many of us come is the example of Reverend Millie, who shows us what a life dedicated to loving people looks like. She makes it look effortless, just like watching the Olympic ice skaters or the prima ballerinas who can do it and defy gravity. Millie makes loving people look like it takes absolutely no energy at all. And for those of us who work very hard in our lives at getting the number of things done that we have to do, that example of effortlessness is one that we need to see because it says it can be done. And we don't even have to go into Olympic training to get there. We can just follow the example of somebody who already knows how to do it. Additionally, besides following an example of love, we do a lot of playing together. We listen, we sing, we laugh a lot, we eat, we talk, we pray. We meet a lot of each other's needs, even if we never really get around to talking about what those needs are. I think this community is an incredibly resourceful one, and that many of us find that our heart's needs are met on a regular basis here. We're a community that can celebrate each other's joys and each other's sorrows. Think of how it feels when you watch people in this community get a promotion at work, or fall in love, or announce that they're going to have a grandbaby, and how good that feels to share their joy with them. Think of how it feels when somebody in the community loses a parent, or gets sick, or struggles, and how much we come together to love each other at that time. Think of how it feels as you watch people come into this community for the first time, wondering what the heck they've stumbled into, and watch them stay, and watch them grow. Think of what it's like to watch people as they get their very first message from Spirit, from a platform, and their sense of wonder and joy. At people who they thought were gone for all time, coming through in ways that are incontrovertible evidence that life and love and joy continues after the change we call death. Think of what it's like to watch people in their first circles, where those small touch-ins that we get on the platform become larger, fuller, deeper touch-ins. I don't know about for you guys, but my first circle was where I knew that I knew. My paternal grandfather came through. And he was a humble man. He was quiet. There would be absolutely no way that those messages could have come from anybody but my grandfather. And they came across with evidence of love. There was no judgment. There was no leftover unfinished business. There was simply the enjoyment of the connection that was still there. And to watch other people find that when they thought that was lost for all time is a joy. We're a community of belief, though if you ask us, we don't have much consensus in what we believe. We have people in the congregation who believe in very traditional Christian ways. We have people who won't touch that with a 40-foot pole. We have people who practice very active 12-step programs to recover from addictions. We have some practicing Buddhists. We really have an awful lot of different belief patterns, but we have a pattern of behaving together in such a way that there's room to have diversity in our beliefs. We have some very special patterns that I'll talk about later in the talk that draw us together as a community. We don't have consensus in what we believe, but we do often have consensus in how we practice. We practice with respect for other people. We practice respect for spirit and for guidance, and certainly for our beloved leaders. Some very wise person said, while spirituality can be discovered in solitude, it can only be fulfilled in community. I would argue that that's very true, that a lot of us spend a lot of time thinking about it and discovering what the meaning of life and spirituality is for ourselves, but that it's here where we get to practice with each other, where we get to ask questions, where we get to be in the community of other believers and practicers that we come to fruition and fullness. So what is this spirituality anyway? There are a couple of hallmarks that we practice here in the community. One is that there's more to reality than meets our eyes. I think we're living, talking proof of that. We live in a world that says if you can't see it under a microscope, it's not real. And yet, if you look at the articles of faith that we practice here, much of what we do isn't visible under a microscope. Try talking about talking to people who've passed anywhere else. And, you know, that if you talk about that with a psychologist, is a good way to get a diagnosis of a pretty severe mental disorder. Not here. Here that's taken so calmly and so matter-of-factly that it's proof that there are other dimensions. The only question is what we do to access those dimensions, how we can make ourselves available to them. We define God as closely as we can define anything, as love. Millie will talk about all of us as being bubbles of love, parts of a greater whole. I'm not sure that that's the ultimate definition of God, but then we're pretty limited people. We can't deal with ultimate definitions. We have to deal with ones that are small enough for us to wrap our brains around. And it matters very much how we define God. If we define a God of judgment, then we're going to have to practice in such a way as to be in relationship with that God. If we define God as love, then when we're practicing love with each other, when we're practicing community, of celebrating together, of singing together, of supporting each other in times of need and loss, then we're practicing the presence of God. One of the other things that we do without knowing that we do it is encouraging each other to practice in our lives outside of church. It's one thing to learn a lesson here, like being loving toward each other. But one of the things I think that we do for each other is make love so real that we're strengthened to take it outside of the boundaries of church as well, and to bring it back here, perhaps to be fueled again, perhaps to be back in the presence of people who love, who value what we do, as we try to take that same change back out into the greater community. I've seen some predictable developmental milestones in becoming members of the community. I've only been here off and on for about 3 years. So for those of you who've been here for 20 years or more, my apologies. I can't see what it looks like from your perspective yet. There are a lot of people who've been members for very, very long periods of time, and maybe you'll share with me some of what you see in addition to the early milestones. The first milestone that maybe most of us can remember is coming and being a first-time visitor and what that was like, to come to a group of people who seem to talk to people that aren't there and who get accurate messages back from them and who practice a tremendous warm welcome, whether it's for the speaker up here on the platform or for a visitor who's here for the first time. I think it's something that as a community we do a very good job of. And I think it's where most of our second stage, that is the return visitors, come from, is finding something here that feels like a heart welcome. I think another part of that is Millie's encouragement to run everything that you hear here through your God self, so that there's no expert that somebody else about what your life and your truth are supposed to be, that instead you're encouraged to belong if that's what's comfortable, to go ahead and experiment, to stay open-minded and open-hearted, and to be welcomed to this group of people if that's what feels right. A third developmental milestone is attending a circle for the first time. Coming up this weekend is the opportunity to go to a circle with Millie at Harmony Grove. I would strongly encourage anyone that's curious and hasn't had a chance to do that to be there. Obviously, people who have had a chance to be there are still choosing to go back. That says something right there. It speaks to the energy and the love that's present in those circles, that people who've done it many, many times make space in their schedules to do it again. There's the opportunity to go to the spiritual development classes with Millie, where you're encouraged not to become, as Millie says, a great psychic, not to develop psychic powers, but to increase your love volume by coming and rooting for other people, by hoping for someone else's good to happen. What amazing wisdom, not to come to get something, not to come to be more of an expert, but to come and add your energy and your hope and your light and your joy to the outcome so that it can happen for someone else as well. That's not an ordinary teaching in this time, in this culture, in this place. That sounds a lot like love. The opportunities for service are another developmental milestone. How about the people who sing in choir? That's a service that they give to us every week. The beautiful music that lifts our spirits when we walk into Sunday church. Or, Janie, your music here on Wednesday nights, you know, never fails to lift my spirits, and it's an act of pure service. So thank you very much. The people who take the healing classes and learn to work the healing stools perform another form of service. People who attend these events so that there's a chance for them to happen. The ones who are smiling at me as we speak, giving me the courage to stand up here and talk to you. The ones who set up for the potlucks and the ordinations and take down the chairs and the tables week after week after week. The ones who are brave to come and speak at forum. The ones who stand up here on the platform, sharing the gift of mediumship with the rest of us who may not quite understand it, but certainly benefit from it. And finally, the group of people who've so dedicated themselves to service that they have decided to go ahead and pursue ministry here at the church. These are people who've taken the gift of this loving community, made it their own, and found ways to give something back to the community. One of the things I think about is how different this church is from other churches that I've attended. I don't know about you guys, but I come from a pretty traditional Christian background. I grew up an Episcopalian. I've attended Unitarian churches and Quaker churches and you name it. One of the things in traditional Christianity that I've never heard happen here is an emphasis on sin and fallenness and redemption. Now, in and of themselves, I don't have a problem with them, but I am curious about why we hear so little about that here. This is not a church where your errors are particularly counted or where we wait until you're made perfect in some fashion or atoned for by a sacrifice. Why is that? Is it because we're more perfect than other people? Nice try, huh? I'm not. I don't know about you guys, but I know I'm not. We call ourselves a church, and yet we do something very, very different than other churches do. And it's the only original thought in the whole talk tonight. But I think I discovered a little bit about why we don't focus on that. We are indeed a love-based church. We're not claiming perfection. But there are two kinds of imperfection. One is an emphasis on sin or wrong. The other is on incompleteness. I'm arguing that this church treats us all as if we're incomplete. And we're incomplete in two central ways. One is we're incomplete without God or Spirit. And the other is that we're incomplete without being in full relationship with each other. And this church community offers us the chance to practice completion in both of those dimensions. When we come and we pray for ourselves, for each other, for the world, we are practicing relationship to God and to Spirit. And without even having to address it, we've entered relationship. We've addressed that form of incompletion as well as we can. We never get to the place where we're complete. We're not supposed to. By definition, we are incomplete. We are meant to be in relationship. The same holds true for being in community with each other. We're never going to grow out of our need for that. I am never going to be past the point where I need you guys to know what's going on with me, what's going on with my daughter or my divorce or my work life or my love life. That's not an inadequacy on my part, but it is an incompletion. And this group of people offers to be for me the family and the community that I don't have elsewhere in the world. And in doing that, offers me a chance at wholeness that I can't find anywhere else. To me, that is the greatest gift that we have for each other, is our openness to God and Spirit and our openness to needing each other. It is indeed what love has to do with it. And why it's so wonderful to get to talk on Valentine's Day. You know, Valentine's, we usually talk about as if it's just about romantic love. Romantic love is a wonderful thing, but most of us need more to stay alive than just romantic love. Rabbi Kushner, the guy who wrote When Bad Things Happen to Good People, identifies five criteria that we need to be healthy, particularly as we age. He argues that we need family, or family substitute for those of us who are not in situations where family is possible, that we need a wider circle of friends, that we need faith, that we need work, and that we need to give something back. If you look at those five criteria and you look at membership here in this spiritual community, 4 out of 5 of those are possible here. Family, friends, faith, and the opportunity to give something back. And perhaps even the chance to grow some energy and some hope to go back to work in the world. I think he's very wise. I think those are criteria that we need to have a good life. And I'm glad that he's talked about them because it lets us ask ourselves whether we too think that's what we need to be healthy and fully alive. Okay, so we have established the idea that we need to love each other to be whole as human beings. And that this particular small, welcoming church is a good place to do that. What happens when we find that because of our own dilemmas, we're not very good at loving or being loved? Anybody else ever had that experience? Of wanting to behave well in relationship, of wanting to be patient, of wanting to be there for someone, and finding that we don't do it very well sometimes, good intentions notwithstanding? How do we stay patient with ourselves in the process of that? The last two talks at Forum were on the 7 deadly sins and on forgiveness. Perhaps because there is a part of us that falls short time and time and time again. We live in a culture that says that anything can be cured. I'm not sure this particular aspect can be cured for all time. I'd like it. I'd like to wake up and know that I was going to be as fully loving as I'd like to be every day of my life. But so far, that's not how I'm finding myself waking up in the mornings. So what do I do? How do I keep from despairing when I see the difference between how I want to be with you and how I actually can be? I think there are some guidelines in some of the wisdom traditions that exist that we can learn from. We may not practice all of the beliefs, but we can borrow from them. One of them comes from psychology, and that is the idea that we can come to honor ourselves for our attempts, no matter how short we fall. It's very easy to get perfectionistic and to quit. In fact, it's easier to get perfectionistic and to quit than it is to get up in the morning and try again. Love sounds like it should be easy. But loving people, being patient, making ourselves available, listening enough to be moved by what you tell me rather than, yeah, I'm getting on with my day, that's not easy. That's work sometimes. Millie doesn't make it look like it's work. But for me, sometimes it's work. And yet it's the work that I think I'm called to do. I think it's the work that we're called to do and be as humans together. And I think sometimes we need to give ourselves credit for the fact that we're working very hard at it, even if we're not making the progress we might like to make. Maybe it's time to stop seeing it in terms of merit badges or getting a grade at it, and just to give ourselves credit for trying for another day. Friends in 12 Steps handle this by becoming experts in spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. That's a phrase that can save me from my own perfectionism. They get credit for trying, and for trying a little closer or a little deeper or a little wider today than we tried yesterday. My Christian friends have a community of strivers as well. They try and try and try again. Their model for how to do that's a little bit different, but they follow an example of love. If you remember, the greatest commandment of all is that we love each other as we've been loved. Maybe it's the greatest commandment not because it's easy, but because it's worth continuing to try day after day after day until we get a little bit closer. My Buddhist friends handle this kind of problem by refusing to get stuck in judgments of what's good or bad. They work very hard to accept what is, rather than getting discouraged in what they can and can't do. And my Jewish friends handle this by agreeing that one of the things that we're here to do as a people is to heal the world, not simply to make our own outcomes the way we want them, but to heal the division and the strife and the pain that's in the world. One of the gifts of shortcomings is to develop something called compassion. Compassion for my own struggles. Compassion for my own broken heart. Compassion for my pain and suffering. Compassion for my shortcomings. And when I work on developing those, guess what? I can't judge you. I can't judge you as incomplete when I see how far I fall short from where I prefer to be. I can use my own falling short to help me not judge you, and I can use the memory of my own suffering to be sure that I don't leave you alone in your suffering. It's the only good gift of pain. I would strongly prefer to live a life that didn't involve loss and suffering. And yet, because I'm human, that's not one of my options. What is an option is to use what I learn and make sure that if I can, I don't leave you alone with yours. One of the biggest differences between psychology and spirituality, most of you know that my training was in psychotherapy, so I get to think these thoughts and these questions about what the difference is, because both of them want wholeness for human beings. It's just their routes for getting there that are a little bit different. And one of the big differences is in what the ultimate outcome is. Psychotherapy really, really, really wants to make you happy. Spirituality really, really, really wants to make you good. There's a difference. We live in a time that says that satisfaction is the ultimate measure of a good life. Anybody found that to be the case yet? Where having all the goodies is enough? I don't honestly think that you'd be in this room if that were the case. This room is not a room filled with people who find that having the best car, the best house, the best vacations seem to be enough. Nobody in here has a thing against having those, but they're not the ultimate measures. So what is this being good? Maybe being good is where we come to value the outcome for other people as well as for ourselves. You'd think that by the time we got through growing up, that would be automatic in all of us. But I don't think it is. I think we live in a time of emotional scarcity. There's sort of a every man for himself mentality that's easy. And I think that spirituality can remind us of the emptiness of that kind of life and can invite us instead to pull together so that the good outcome happens for all of us. Okay, how do we grow in community? A couple of quick tips and then I'm done. We grow by modeling from somebody else. Choose somebody that seems to be a little further along the path than you are and see if you can behave like they do for a while. That's how little kids learn. They imitate behavior. My friends in 12-step programs talk about this as faking it till we make it. Borrowing the behaviors. Because we can't really understand what the feeling is like until we've got the behavior. Borrow Millie's behavior. Follow it for a while until the spirit of it shows up and makes it make sense. Ask questions. Ask for explanations. See if somebody further down the road can make this make sense. Some of you have been my best teachers that have asked you questions. Tolerate diversity. Pray for ourselves, for each other, for the world. Listen to each other's stories. It's in listening that we really get to know each other. In getting to know each other, we get to know our own stories. And if you get really brave, stand up here and tell us your story too. Thanks for sharing.